Radio.
Seeking lay holiness. How can we be in the world but not of the world? Jess Leach interviews four lay people with different backgrounds on their experiences of seeking lay holiness at this August 2012 Reach Out panel discussion. Reach Out is hosted by the Immaculata community at St. Thomas Becket Lewisham on the third Saturday of every month.
We decided to have this topic on the call to seeking to be holy as a layperson in the world, so in the world but not of the world. And it's sort of in anticipation of the 50th anniversary of Vatican II that we had this great moment in the church where we're reminded that we are all called to holiness. Not just the priests and the nuns, but every single person who sits in the pew, each single person is called by God to be set apart, to be holy, to be special for Him, and to love Him and to love others. And so that's why we've assembled this very special panel tonight, not necessarily because they're holy, because probably if they were, they might be dead. God tends to take you, you know, once you get in really close. But because they're here to share about their own experiences, their own struggles, their own tips in seeking holiness. So I'm just going to introduce them to you now and ask them to just introduce themselves and tell us what they do and who they might be married to or about to be married to, and how perhaps they started going deep in the journey of lay holiness very briefly. Anna?
Hi, my name's Anna. I'm 25 and I'm married to Anthony. And we have a beautiful six-week-old baby boy called Isaac. And for me, I really, in my faith journey, coming to the mission school in 2009, January 2009, here in Lewisham, was when I really, I guess, went further into my faith.
Hi, I'm Patrick. I'm married to Yvonne. I have seven kids. I'm about 31, 32. I haven't lost count. I'm the seventh kid. I belong to the Immaculate community here in Lewisham. Been here for about 10 years, I'll say, in the community. Pretty much started off World Youth Day 2002 in Canada. I guess that's where I first had my experience with God. And ever since then, it's been really good. Thank you.
I'm Sarah. I actually just got engaged on Wednesday. I guess my faith journey got its kickstart at World Youth Day in 2008, and then also through the Youth Leaders Formation course that I did. It was a one-month living course, and I roomed with Jess.
My name is Stephen Rawson, and I'm married to Stefania. We have five children. This is the second youngest, Binion. I started my faith journey about a few years ago, 25 maybe, by going to a Catholic university which was very similar to this community called Franciscan University of Steubenville. And it was great.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, guys. Well, we'll kick off with what I think is a good place to start, the question of why are we actually called to be holy as lay people. So I want to thank those people who handed in questions, and I hope we'll get to all your questions tonight. So this is the first one. We are always learning about the holiness of religious, for example, the multitude of saints who are priests or religious. As a result, a discerning Catholic may be excused for feeling like the lay life is a path to lesser holiness, which we should know is not true. But can we understand how this is not true? How can we understand that the lay life is not a path to lesser holiness? And what advice would you have for someone who feels this way? It's the first question, so I'll just see if anyone wants to jump in there. Is that Steve?
Yeah, can you repeat the question? If I understood the question, lay holiness is not a path to lesser holiness. Absolutely true. We're all called to holiness in every state of life. It It doesn't matter what our states in life is. Whether we're single, married, a brother, a nun, a sister, a holy consecrated person, every state in life is simply a state in life. It's not a guarantee of holiness. It's not a measure of holiness. It's not even an indication of holiness. If I'm married, it doesn't mean that I'm more holy than a single person or less holy than a single person. It's how I live my vocation as a married person. And there's incredible opportunity to become a saint in a marriage. It's just my call. It's just my way of being, and the pathway that the Lord has. And I don't know if it's any easier. I don't know if it's any more difficult. I mean, being a single person has incredible challenges. Being a married person has incredible challenges. Being a priest, I would imagine, has incredible challenges. So every state in life has a call, as an individual call to holiness, and it presents different ways, a different pathway. But the holiness can be achieved in that. I think I've said enough anyway.
No, thank you, Steve. I was going to ask you, Anna, as someone who lived with religious for a couple of years, but the Sisters of the Immaculata, and who's now living as a married woman, did you ever struggle with that idea that maybe you wouldn't be as holy if you weren't a nun? And how did you overcome that?
Is that working?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I guess there was that thought. I mean, it seems to be a common thought by lay people that religious sort of are up there and they're the ones searching for holiness. At least that's what I was brought up thinking. I don't know where that came from, though. But I don't know that I ever struggled in terms of, you know, if I become a sister, then I'll be holier.
Well, that is a grace. So thanks very much to the person who asked that question, because I think it's a good one to start with, because it's probably something that some of us have thought about at some point in time. I love what you said, Steve, that really it's about us living the fullness of our own vocation. So what is the importance in living our vocation to being a layperson through being formed? So what role does formation play, both formation in prayer and in our knowledge of the faith, in being able to seek holiness? Sarah, you mentioned that you spent 1 month living with, you know, 20 other young people doing a formation course. What role did that have in helping you seek holiness?
Well, I guess, firstly, the role of formation is to help you desire it, I guess, both spiritual and intellectual formation, because, I mean, what I found is when I didn't know my faith, I had no desire to live it. And so, obviously, learning about what our church teaches on an intellectual level, that helps us see how much sense, like how rational it is and how much it makes sense and how beautiful it is. And it makes us want to live it. And then obviously the prayer part of it, I mean, if that's not there, the desire won't be there either. That's where God gives us that desire to live holy lives. It comes through prayer. And so that 1 month was very important in triggering that desire. Like for me personally, before I went into that month of formation, and during that time we had lectures, 3 lectures every day, and an hour of adoration in the morning and daily mass, and then there'd be time for more prayer during the day, just your own quiet prayer in the chapel. And that it was so important in helping me to detach from all of the things of the world, so the lifestyle that I had been living prior to that, which was somewhat hedonistic and a little bit, anyway. But when you're living in that, and you know, unless you take that time to learn and to pray and to take that time out with God, then it's impossible to detach from it. It was by having that time, by taking that time, that I received that grace to want to detach from that in the first place. Mm-hmm. Pat, I know that you and your wife had a time when you lived in the convent prior to being an actual convent again. Was that an opportunity for you to sort of, retreat a bit from the world and have a deeper time of formation as opposed to always being pulled and challenged?
Yeah, most definitely. I guess having that time away from just working in the world and doing everything else that you got to worry about financial stuff, and just having that, I think Sarah mentioned, virtually detached from that for that time. It was just really a time of grace for me. Just knowing, forming myself, in God, knowing what the church teaches, and I had to describe it going to the desert, just going really down to the desert, just being alone with God. Knowing that, I've got my family and sisters at the time around me, but it was just a time of real grace that I could really get to know my Creator and my Maker. So, having that time away to really just, focus on that and not have those worries, to really, set yourself apart, to know God.
Thank you. And Pat, you might be able to answer this as well. We have a question about juggling prayer and family life. So obviously there's times in our lives when we have formation and we retreat and maybe we spend a whole month or even longer. I know myself and some other people studied for 9 months, in formation. Sort of out of the world, but suddenly you've got 7 kids. How do you juggle prayer and family life? How do you incorporate that prayer into your family?
It's having a good wife. definitely. I wouldn't be able to do it without my wife. She's just so incredible. Supports. Knowing that it's really needed in a Christian family to have that. That time with God and that time of prayer as well, and also bringing it into the family household as we say our rosaries every day in the household, and just making it just normal. It's a normal thing to do, and the kids they love it, and because they've been brought up at such a young age, and when we say it's time for rosary, they just close off everything, whatever they're doing, they'll just stop and they'll come sit down. Obviously, the little ones are still a bit too young to do it now, but it is. It's just a real time of grace to have that prayer life involved in family life as well. And I want to separate it. I just see it as just part of a normal Christian life, family life. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you also about that, Anna, because you've got this new baby, 6 weeks old, and so your life has dramatically changed, and that must be hard to juggle that with prayer. But how do you understand that, and how does that work for you?
I think the question of juggling prayer and life is more something that I've really struggled with over the last few years, because I guess my life has had some major changes in such a short period of time, and they're consistently changing. So I was living in a convent, and then went out and worked in the world, and then suddenly I was engaged, and then I was married, and then I fell pregnant, and then I had a baby. So it all happened really in quite a short period of time. And when your life changes, your prayer has to change too. They go hand in hand. And it was a real struggle for me as to how to go about that. And I guess the hardest thing I found was going from living inside the convent, where it was such a prayerful place, and work, everything was prayed about in terms of what we did in the convent, and then going out into the world, and suddenly I didn't have as much time to put towards to having prayer, and I really struggled with that idea. But what I found over the few years of, trying to, figure out how to have a balanced prayer life is that, prayer's our relationship, our conversation with our Heavenly Father, and it's not necessarily about how many hours I might come to prayer, but rather the quality and the relationship that I have with Him. And so really I've found as I guess things that have helped me is having a bit of structure in my prayer life. So, I mean, the church gives us so many prayers and ways in which we can, that can help us. So, I mean, doing a morning offering, so starting a day in prayer and finishing a day in prayer, and then prayers during the day that the church gives us. For me, the rosary, and I know that's been a, like, I love to pray the rosary every day, and I know during my pregnancy I actually found it really hard to do that, and I used to beat myself up about it, but I came to realise that, you know, the Lord doesn't want me to pray a rosary that is heartless, like one decade is much, that's prayed from the heart is so much more meaningful. So, yeah, I think, oh, and having a baby, that's what you asked me, right? I guess I've actually found having a baby, I have so much more time to pray because I breastfeed. So I have no excuse not to be able to pray a rosary a day because some feeds can go for over an hour. And I actually have found it quite beautiful in that I pray it aloud at home with my child and almost have to pray like a mother does with her children, and it's really actually helped me to be much more childlike before God, and yeah, it's really made my prayer, sort of given my prayer a fresh start again.
Yeah. So an interesting investment for having a child. That's great. So in regards to holiness, we often hear that a big part of holiness is about laying down our lives. So we are all called to make real sacrifices and sometimes very hard sacrifices for Christ. How have you experienced this as a layperson? I was wondering if Steve, you could speak maybe about how have you experienced real sacrifices?
I'm probably not very good at, I don't like sacrifices very much.
That's probably why you should share.
Marriage, when I was in university, I remember saying this prayer to God, let me be a saint, a sufferer, and a saver of souls. And but no idea what that meant, and I still have no idea what that meant. I think it was just because I wanted to get to heaven and thought, okay, if I do all that, I'll be in heaven, you know. But sacrifice is such a hard one. Sacrifice is, the way I think of sacrifice is dying to myself, and simply it means putting other people before me. And I find that very difficult, to do it. I'll give you a small example in the family, in prayer. My wife is complementary to me or opposite to me in a lot of ways. I'm very vivacious, outward looking. I like to be with people. I like to talk. I don't like to reflect on things. I just like to say whatever pops into my head at any time. And whereas Stefania is very, very pensive, very internal. She really likes to reflect and think about it. So in our prayer lives, we found it very difficult to have a balanced prayer life because she's more like a contemplative, meditative type person, and whereas I'm much more action-oriented, so I love saying rosary, you know, just let's say rosary, let's get that done. And she doesn't mean much to her, she's not used to saying the rosary, and so we found it very difficult, and it's taken me 10-12 years to realize that you know, sacrificing in that respect is to find a way that we can pray together, find a way that we can relate to God, that both of us can do it. Not, I love going to Mass, so I get up and go to Mass early in the morning. But then that means that Stefania, who struggles getting up early in the morning, has to get up early and look after the kids. So a lot of times, although going to Mass is a good thing, if I'm letting Stefania take care of the kids, and then she's tired for the rest of the day, it's not such a good thing. So it really, for me, sacrifices putting the other person first, putting my children first, putting my wife first, and that's something I really have had to learn to do it in our marriage. So I'm still trying to learn to do it.
Thank you, Steve. This next question is, have you, any of you, ever discerned a vocation to the priesthood or religious life? And how did you discern? And Sarah, we know that you've just gotten engaged, but you did have a period of being single. And would you care to answer? How did you discern about your vocation, and how were you sure that you were being called to the lay life?
Just basically, Tom and I were together before, actually before our conversions, and for a period of 2.5 years I was then single, and I felt like, you know, the grace of conversion, I felt like I really wanted to have a religious vocation. Or no, it wasn't that I really wanted it or that I felt drawn that way, or I just wanted to spend all my time with God in a cloister just praying. During this 2.5 years, I did feel like there might be a calling there, and so obviously made that decision to be single and to sort of work on my prayer life, and obviously life in the sacraments and that, and going to these discernment retreats and doing research and things like that, and just trying to, just basically it was all about getting closer to God at the heart of it. Like, I wasn't always 100% active trying to seek out orders, but it was just about trying to make that time for God, to spend with God, to find the person who he wants me to be, and to sort of conform my own will more and more to his. And yeah, and which was hard because, like, you know, obviously there was a pull both ways, and that I would sort of go, like, teeter in between, and it was very confusing at times. And then there was that one stage where I was even like, sure, yeah, this must be my calling, I must be called to religious life. But it didn't stick around. Basically what happened was, so as I was just going along, and I was working, and I was praying, and I wasn't feeling called anywhere in particular, which was confusing, so I kept the prayer. Prayed a lot of novenas. And then when I was actually overseas for World Youth Day, then there was sort of this sort of restlessness, like, it was actually, like, I missed Tom. I wanted to see Tom. And I wanted him to be with me to share those experiences. But obviously, like, I still had this thing that I was like, no, that's wrong. I can't go that way. I'm called to religious life. I can't think about that. But when I came back and I was sort of still, like, wrestling with this, and praying with it, and it wasn't sort of going away, and I was just getting more and more upset about it because I kept on pushing that to the side. And so I prayed. I started praying this 54-day rosary novena. And it was during that I sort of, it occurred to me, if we're both actively seeking God's will, if all we both want is to do God's will, then there's no harm in discerning this together. And so, yeah, so then we started courting, and obviously, like, we both tried to keep our prayer up, and the more we did that and we prayed together and whatnot, then it was sort of like, it just felt right, and there was peace about it. There wasn't that struggle. What I sort of discovered with that time of single 2.5 years, there's that saying, a woman's heart should be so lost in God that man has to seek God to find her. He'll eventually give you that peace somewhere. We got engaged on the Feast of the Assumption, so Mary's looking after her.
So there's a very good tip: entrust your vocation to Our Lady. Steve went to a university that was very, the search for a vocation was very open and real at Franciscan. You know, people were very comfortable with that idea. Did you have a time of discernment? Was there a period in your life when you sought to know that side of things?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I rediscovered my faith at Steubenville, and it really is like an environment like the Immaculata Community where everybody encounters the faith. I encountered faith there by people that were absolutely passionate about God. It's the first time in my life that I had met so many people who just had one desire, and that was to know and love God. And it was such a powerful witness that I was the first time that I experienced the freedom to allow that to happen to me, to allow that to God come into my life. And then it was the next logical step was, God, where do you want me? I really wanted to be holy. I really wanted to be a saint, and so I thought, as natural Catholic progression, it was become a priest or become a brother or something like that. And I did really all the time pray, and I went on a few retreats for various orders and really discerned. But I just couldn't do it. I didn't think. I didn't think it was for me. I didn't think it was quite right. And so I didn't pursue it, and I went to work. And eventually, I knew I wanted to get married, and found my wife. But really did discern for a long time, and was always torn until I finally got engaged and got married. And then I was certain that was my vocation.
You mentioned Steve being in an environment when people were really, you know, set on fire to love God, and how that inspired you. And I was wondering, you know, Pat, if you could speak about perhaps as a layperson the importance of being surrounded by other lay people who are also seeking holiness, or just other people who are seeking holiness.
Yeah, definitely. It's very important to have that, to be surrounded by those with the same faith, those with the same mindset to know God. So many times, like for myself, I can see, like back when I started getting to know God, when I had that first experience with God, I was like living in two camps, like, you know, going out clubbing and drinking and that, and then coming and, you know, just rocking up to mass on that Sunday, and it was just so hard. I just couldn't do it, and I came to a point where it was possible, where I had to make a choice. I couldn't play the two games. And since I made that choice to be around those who want to know God, it's been so awesome, because it just rubs off each other. We just rub off each other so much that you just want that person to be holy, and that person wants me to be holy. And, you know, it's just a real God-loving environment to be in. And to know that, to know that you won't be judged, to know that, you know, you can, you know, ask questions about your faith, and know that, you know, some in the group would have those answers and those and the same question as well. To have that, it's just, I guess it's just a wonderful thing to have to be around in that environment.
Thank you. Sometimes we're not around those of the same faith as us, and we've got a question about that now. How do we live out lay holiness around people who are already in faith and beliefs of another religion? It's, for example, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, or even perhaps atheism, those who are convinced of the existence, that God does not exist. What can we do around them so that they don't feel like they're being confronted or forced to change their beliefs? Do you have any thoughts, Anna?
I guess my experience of that would be in the workplace, off the top of my head. And for me, I mean, I'm not the kind of person that goes around and, I guess, tries to convert people through what I have to say. I think really it's about our actions and how we treat them as a person, and how we love them, and to not, I guess, not to judge them. Because we really don't know their background or really much about them at all. My experience in my workplace, so after living and working for the parish here, I went and worked in an architecture firm, and there's three other people that I worked with, and none of them had a Christian, were practicing Christians. One had a bit of background, but I really went into that workplace and decided that I would just be who I am and not hide anything, and speak freely, you know, if I was asked a question, not to cover up who I really was. Because it's quite, I guess that's one of the struggles I have as a layperson, is like, it's so much easier just to pretend you're like other people and not real, and, you know, not stand up for what you believe. And so when I went into this workplace, I had to tell them that I lived in a convent and sisters, they didn't even know sisters existed in Sydney. What surprised me was that their response was so positive, and so they were so intrigued, they asked questions. So for me, it was really just being true to who you are, and it's about our actions more so than words. And in terms of opportunities to share with others about our faith, I quite often would walk to work and pray, you know, Lord, if you know, give me an opportunity to share with them, or in conversation. And sometimes that happened, and I was talking to my boss about work, about how having holidays in Christmas, and my reason for needing holidays was because I wanted to come to the mission school and help out. And so that kind of led to, that was the Lord opening this door to, like, he didn't need to ask me that why I wanted holidays. And so he asked me about the mission school, and then the conversation ended and we went back to work. We're both facing different walls of different computers. And probably about an hour later, we were the only two in the office, he turned to me and said, you know, started this conversation about and wanted to know about my faith. And I shared with him, and in a really, because he was approaching me, it was so much easier then to share with him. And about half an hour, 45 minutes later, I don't know, like it went on for quite a while, he said to me, you know, I haven't spoken about, you know, God or Christianity in about 20 years. Like, he hadn't spoken a word to anyone. And I was just like, wow, you know, that's incredible. So, and I do believe it was the angels that were there.
Just following on from that question, maybe this is something you can speak to, Pat. How can you behave like a Christian in the workplace and ensure that you're not viewed as a pushover or a weak person?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, exactly what Anna said, like, you know, you got to be true to yourself. And wherever I worked, you know, I would just let people know what I, like, I'm not like just go straight up, meet them. Hi, I'm Catholic, but I say my name. But it's like lunchtime, it's like, you know, I say it, and I do the sign of the cross, say a prayer, and I'll be sitting around 40 staff in this tea room, and they'll be all staring at me at the end, and like, so they knew show I was Catholic, and then yeah, you get approached, and I guess, yeah, for me, it's to be strong, yeah, you got to be strong about what you believe in, you got to know what you believe in, you know, you can't just be, you know, saying, oh yeah, I believe in this, and not know anything about it, because yeah, you will get questioned. I think when I first started coming back to my faith, I didn't know much. Like, my brother used to give me all these books about defend the faith and all that, and I thought, well, that's really good. So I never read it. And then until one day, this guy at work, he challenged me in my faith. He was from Church of Christ, and they believe that Jesus wasn't God. He was a prophet and so forth. A bit like a Jehovah's Witness. View on Jesus, and I didn't know what, you know, he was coming to me with verses and all that, why you call your priest fathers and all this. And I was like, I don't even know all this. And then I went back home, and I remember saying to my brother, where's all those books that you gave me? He goes, you still got them. I go, okay, cool. So I started reading up all these questions he gave me, and it was like, yeah, you know, just learned about it. I came back to him and go, oh yeah, this is why we put, you know, our priest fathers, why we, you know, we pray to Mary, we don't worship her. And then, but this guy, he was like militant. He knew where to come when everything was blocked. He'll come in another angle and he'll just keep going. And I got to a point where I just gave him the book. I go, here's the book. I was really new. And I said, yeah, read it. And if you have any questions, come and ask me. And he never talks to me after that. So, yeah. So I thought, yeah, the cheaper way of defending your faith is to read in my books all the time. So, yeah. But yeah, definitely, it's something you have to be really strong. You got to know what you're talking about, know what you're believing in, and then it just comes naturally. Like, I've dealt with Buddhist, Islam, Hindus. Like, it's just you know, they always ask me the question, though, why you believe in God, and all, you know, how come you got so many kids and all that, you know, and it's just and then you got the atheists. You know, don't you have a TV? You know, no. Yeah, it's like the atheist. Like, it's just amazing how you can be really, really come different approaches with different people, and that's what the church teaches. You know, it's just got so many answers for everything, and it's so beautiful.
You mentioned, Pat, about how challenging it is sometimes, you know, people, you have seven kids or things like this, and it's definitely the way that we live relationships as Catholics seeking holiness is very different maybe to the way that relationships are lived in the world. And we've got a question here about relating, dating and holiness. And the question is, how can you strengthen relationships with holiness? And specifically, and you know, this is very practical, but it's something you might be able to speak to, Anna, why do people kiss or decide not to kiss?
Wait a second.
It's funny because we were speaking about this only yesterday.
I know. I regret the conversation.
I didn't write the question.
Do you want me to share?
Yeah.
So Jess and I were talking, and we were talking about, I don't even know how the conversation came up, but about affection and affection in dating. And I guess I can share that Anthony and I were in a relationship prior to my conversion, and we were reflecting on, you know, the way that we used to act prior to coming into the faith, and how big an impact kissing in particular has in a relationship. And for us, we did kiss prior to my conversion, and as part of my conversion there was a lot of things that needed to change, and one of them was kissing. And for a long time I convinced myself that kissing was fine, you know, but really kissing always leads to more than kissing, and really it's I'm not saying that it did, but it tempts you to, there's a temptation there. And so in the end, and after quite a long time, we decided that no kissing was the way to go. And it was really hard for us in that process to, because it's such an affectionate thing. And so we stopped, and it actually became so much easier to live out holiness in our relationship and to grow together in our faith. And because there was no desire then for anything more, and it really purified our relationship, and allowed us to get to know each other as without any kind of physical element, and it made I guess, marriage such a special thing, because, yeah, that kiss on the altar is pretty special.
Thank you. I wanted to ask that some of us here, the lay people who are here sharing, are part of communities. So Steve's part of the Emmanuel community, and Anna and Pat are part of the Immaculata community. And it's not always easy to be in community. You know, you said before, Pat, it's wonderful to be around people who are like really inspiring and encouraging. But anyone who's ever lived in community or been in community knows it's not always easy. But how does it strengthen your search for holiness, Steve?
Well, the community is a great, great gift from God, and it's quite incredible. In the Emmanuel community, we have three charisms, which is evangelization, compassion, and adoration. And those are things that really, really resonated with me. And I just thought that it was such a wonderful harmony. It was such a wonderful place to grow in love and grow in holiness. But it is also very, very challenging. It's very, very difficult. And quite often in the Emmanuel community, we have to recommit every year. So we take a commitment before Jesus and the Eucharist to form part of Emmanuel for another year. So every year we have to discern, are we called to Emmanuel? Is this our calling? And often we're so challenged, mostly by other community members. Living close to other people is very difficult because you can not get along with people. People can irritate you. They challenge you, and sometimes you don't want to be challenged. And so it's not an easy thing. And I remember this one specific time where Stefania and I were really struggling with whether or not we were going to recommit. And we have companions in the Emmanuel community, and so that's people that you join up with. If you're single, single. If you're married, a married couple, where you talk about your faith journey, and it's just someone you can bounce things off with, and you can say, "Oh, these are my struggles. What's happening?" And you try to talk to them on a regular basis, like once a month. And we were talking to Stefania and I were talking to our companions, and we were saying, "Oh, we're just really struggling. We're thinking of leaving the community." And they said, "Oh, you know, we just went through that a little while ago." This was a couple that had been in the community for so long, and we saw them as just part of the community. We never thought that they would be struggling with this, should we be in the community or stay in the community. And they said, and what we realized is that if we left, we would want to join another community, because community is so much part of making it as a Catholic, making it in your holiness, in your struggle for holiness. You need brothers and sisters, you need the help of other people to help you make it. Or whether it comes through a strong parish or through a community like Emmanuel Immaculata. And so we realized, wait a second, which community do we join? Because once we join that community, it would be great at first, and you'd meet all new people and everything would be wonderful, and then all the same things would start to happen, the struggles that we had. So it helped us to realize, oh yeah, actually our call is in the community. And for the various reasons we discerned. So we discerned that was it's where we felt at home, where we thought it was right. And so the struggles that were making us think we should leave the community were really just difficulties that were part of everyday struggle for holiness, and they were not that we weren't called for the community. It was that we were just needing to confront those struggles and grow in holiness. It was a challenge. It was a call to grow and become more holy. So,
Pat, I was wondering if you'd like to speak to that. How does community life help you grow in holiness?
Yeah, as I shared earlier, like just doing communion, that they're rubbing off. When I say rubbing off, it's like the good and bad stuff that we rub off against. And I guess when Yvonne and I, the kids were living in the convent, there was, it would have been about six or eight of us, another married couple, Ruth and Paul, and a few singles. I was living there, and yeah, and Steve just mentioned that, sometimes we wouldn't see eye to eye in a few things, like it might be just, you know, leaving the soap on the left hand side of the sink and not on the right hand side of the sink. And it would irritate, you know, it would irritate somebody. Living in that community life was helped us share our struggles, share what we're annoyed about. So we used to meet up, and if anyone had anything that was on their chest, you know, to speak to that person, or speaking to the whole group. And it's one thing that Immaculata says, you know, to talk to your brother and sister if you have any issues, go and see them. And there was something that we encouraged in community, not to hold it back, hold resentment, because it just builds up anger and it just takes all over. You know, it takes over your whole body and just affects the way you speak, the way you do things with that person. So we used to, you know, always have that meetings and used to be the best times too, because when I used to see two people walk away, like, here we go. That was good. I used to be in that room as well, and you find out, like, you know, that person never knew, you know, didn't know, you know, just didn't know, it was just oblivious from, you know, that this was irritating you, or, you know, and then you walk out and you're thinking, well, you know, it was hard, yeah, but now we could, like, really look at each other as brothers and sisters or brothers in Christ, you know, again, you know, and it's just an amazing thing to have that in the community, like, we can really grow to love God together, yeah.
Thank you. Sarah, I've got a question here. What are the biggest barriers to holiness in modern society? Now, you work, as you said, you work for Cradio, which is Catholic radio online, and so you're constantly, you know, thinking about how does the church engage with the world. As a layperson, what do you see as being this biggest barrier in the world to your own holiness?
To my own holiness? Really, I think it... Everything in our culture goes against it, goes against living the Christian life. So I really think it goes down to your own weaknesses. I think from the perspective of evangelization, this is something I've been thinking about recently. For us as Christians, we're trying to live the faith. For us, I find one of our biggest barriers for holiness is our tendency to spend a lot of time talking to ourselves, and sometimes I was listening to a talk the other day about how, you know, we can get into this trap of thinking, you know, we're the chosen ones and, you know, we've got to go save all these people, whereas we need to see ourselves as the, rather than the instruments, like, so the salt of the earth, the light of the world, we're the instruments through which God will transfer his grace to touch these other people around us, our brothers and sisters, you know, who we're not out there trying to convert with a hammer. And so I think sometimes our own, obviously our own arrogance is a huge obstacle, especially when you start to be when you start to receive more formation and learn your faith. Arrogance, pride is a huge issue. The general things, just the consumerism of our society. You know, we're attached to objects. We're so attached to objects, I find. And, you know, in my own experience, I've found that comforts, being attached to comforts, really prevents you from being free to do God's will. These attachments to these superficial things that our culture values so highly, the extent to which we value those things is the extent to which we're going to be restrained from doing God's will. Yeah, those are just a couple of them.
How do you try to overcome some of those?
With great pain. with people in your life who just keep on reminding you really what it's all about. You know, giving you a kick, reminding you that it's all about getting to heaven, and you know, that's what we're striving for. So this life is just a, you know, a blink. And so it really doesn't matter, even if we have to, you know, have some sacrifices in this life, well, you know, we have the next life to look forward to. But aside from that, also just knowing that what God wants for you, that confidence in that relationship with God, knowing that what God wants for you is what's ultimately going to fulfill you, what's going to make you happy, that it's, you know, it's like just taking some medicine. So when there are those opportunities to die to yourself, something that you know in your mind, you know, I don't need that, even though it's really painful to make that decision in that moment, you know, it's just some medicine that tastes really bad, but it's good for you, and it's, you know, it's going to make you better. So, yeah.
That's great, thank you. I think maybe we'll finish up in a moment. We just wanted to ask each of you, before we let you go back to your seats, to share maybe one last thought that you might have had if you were, you know, to think of the advice that you wish you could have given to yourself, you know, at the start of this journey in seeking lay holiness. You know, what would that be, and therefore what advice could you give to all of us tonight? We might start with you, Pat.
I'm still talking to myself. I guess, yeah, like, the advice I'd give myself. Just to know that, to carry on, just, you know, whatever obstacles come in your way, like, you know that God is bigger than that. God is always bigger than that. And to know that, yeah, that you're greatly loved by your community. And never doubt that, I guess. And so, yeah, to really, really look forward to the sacrifice and struggles that you go through. Don't ever, I guess, there'll be always that first, you know, reflex just to push it to the side, but to always, yeah, embrace the sacrifice and the struggles that you have in front of you, and not to look to anyone else that could do it better, you know, just to really know that God's put it in front of you and He's there with you.
We'll come back to Anna, Sarah.
I guess one of the big lessons I learned the hard way was God's love doesn't have to be earned. So, you know, just learning, I think what's key is just learning how to know more and more each day how He loves you, and just trying to respond to that love, you know, rather than trying to work for it, because then the problem with that is when you stuff up, and you know, you start to despair, and you turn away from Him more. So just knowing, having that confidence, you know, His love is always there. You don't have to work for it. You can't rack up merits that's going to make Him love you more. So.
Yeah, I'm sort of along Patrick's lines. The thing that I've learned later in life is not to run from the challenges. I had a lot of bad character traits that I developed, and although God loves me and I can't earn by praying 100 hours a day, if there was 100 hours a day, but I can't earn God's love and God's merit, I do have to deal with my weaknesses. I really need to face my weaknesses, and that's something that I've come to learn later in life, and that's something I wish I'd done earlier. This priest, this holy, holy brother, Father Augustine at Franciscan University, he told me, he said, "Steve, holiness," and he said, "discipline won't make you holy." He said, "But you cannot be holy without discipline." And you know, I was so undisciplined. And I still think that that's a really big weakness of mine, to be disciplined. And I've become a lot better with family and life and the commitments I have. I've sort of had to be disciplined. But I think if I had worked at that when he told me, you know, 25 years ago, to work on that, I think I would have been way farther ahead in my strive for holiness. So,
I think to remember that our faith is a journey, and that holiness is something that we consistently, throughout our whole life, have to strive for. So not to become too comfortable, I guess, with where we are, because I guess the saying of, like, if you're not moving forwards, then you're going backwards. And to really take opportunities that the Lord gives you to grow in holiness. So if he asks you of something, you know, we have free will and we can say no to God, and each day he gives us opportunities to grow in little ways. And so just to say yes, because it's in those little yeses that we will continue to grow in holiness.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Pat, Sarah, Steve, and Finian, who was incredibly well behaved. We will be proud of you.
For more talks and resources, go to cradio.org.au.